Pascal Film Productions present Leslie Howard in Bernard Shaw's Pygmalion. Introducing Wendy Hiller. Produced by Gabrielle Pascal. Screenplay and dialogue, Bernard Shaw. Scenario, W.P. Lipscomb and Cecil Lewis. Original music, Arthur Honegger. Sets designed by Lawrence Irving. Art director, John Ryan. Assistant director, Teddy Baird. Camera, Jack Hilliard. Photography, Harry Stradley. Film editor, David Lean. Musical conductor, Lewis Levy. Directed by Anthony Asquith and Leslie Howard. Distributed by General Film Distributors, made at Pinewood Film Studios, England. Cast: Higgins, Leslie Howard. Eliza, Wendy Hiller. Doolittle, Wilfred Lawson. Mrs. Higgins, Marie Lohr. Colonel Pickering, Scott Sunderland. Mrs. Pierce, Jean Cadell. Freddie, David Tree. Mrs. Ainsford Hill, Everly Gregg. Clara, Louine McBride. Count Aristide Carpathay, Esme Percy. Ambassadress, Violet Vanbrugh. Isabel, Iris Hoey. Perfide, Viola Tree. Grand Old Lady, Kate Cutler. A Lady, Kathleen Nesbitt. A Vicar, O.B. Clarence. Sarcastic Bystander, Ivor Bernard. Mrs. Higgins' Parlor Maid, Eileen Belden. Taxi Driver, Frank Atkinson. Pygmalion was a mythological figure who dabbled in sculpture. He made a statue of his ideal woman, Galatea. It was so beautiful, he prayed to the gods to give it life. His wish was granted. Bernard Shaw, in his famous play, gives a modern interpretation of this theme. Lifting flowers into a large basket, a young woman chats with a friend at a flower stand. In a tattered straw bonnet and an old shawl, Eliza carries her basket through a busy outdoor market. She passes a man in an overcoat and a dress hat. The man slowly wanders between the stalls through the working-class crowd. He passes tradesmen carrying baskets of produce on their heads. Eventually, he reaches a busy square where trucks and horse-drawn carts are unloaded in front of the portico entrance of Covent Garden Theatre. Later that evening, the square is deserted except for two men warming themselves over a fire by a small hut. The man in the overcoat enters the square and approaches the theater. He notices the two men and wanders over to their hut.
Why? I found a tavern jeweler in one last week.
What a jeweler?
A tavern jeweler.
Standing behind them, he eavesdrops on their conversation.
Well, what does he do with his mouth?
Eats the bananas, you mug.
Looks like rain.
Yeah, it's stormy, ain't it?
The man pulls up the collar of his overcoat and heads to the shelter of the theater entrance where two elegantly dressed women are standing. They look out at the rain.
What can Freddy be doing all this time?
He really ought to have got us a taxi by now.
Taxi! Taxi! Taxi!
You won't get a taxi now. What with the rain and the theater traffic?
There's not a taxi to be had for love or money.
You haven't tried at all.
Oh, you really are helpless, Freddy. Go again and don't come back until you have found this one.
I shall simply get soaked for nothing.
Well, what about us, you selfish pig?
Oh, very well, I'll go.
He bumps into Eliza.
Sorry.
Now then, Freddy, look where you're going there.
Oh, all my varlets, God in the mud.
She picks up her flowers. Curiously, the two women watch Eliza. Eliza gathers her things and sits by a stone column. The older woman approaches.
How do you know that my son
son's name is Freddy.
How is your son, is he? Well, if you've done your duty by him as a mother should...
The man in the overcoat takes notes as he watches Eliza in the morning.
Well, there's a sixpence for you.
Oh. Thank you kindly, lady.
Now, will you tell me how you know the young man's name?
I heard you call him Freddy. Now, don't you try and deceive me.
Yeah, Earl's trying to deceive you. I called him Freddy or Charlie. Same as you might yourself if you was talking to a stranger and wished to be pleasant.
Come along, Mother. Sixpence thrown away.
A gentleman with a moustache runs out of the rain to the theatre entrance.
Oh, cheer up, Captain. If it's raining worse, his sign is nearly over. Come on, buy a flower off a poor girl.
I'm sorry, I haven't any change.
Gone, Captain. I can change you half a crown.
No, don't be troublesome. There's a good girl. I haven't any change, really. Here's tuppence, if that's any use to you.
Captain!
Oh,
thank you, Captain.
A man in a bowler hat approaches Eliza.
Be careful. Give him a flower for it. There's a bloke over there taking on every blessed word you're saying.
I ain't done nothing wrong by speaking to the gentleman. I'm a good girl. I am, so help me.
What's your in about?
But I never spoke to him except to ask him to buy a flower off me.
What's the good of fussing?
What's the row?
What'd she do?
There's a tech taking her down. Him over there.
Eliza walks over to the man in the overcoat.
What do you want to take down what I said for? You'll just show me what you wrote. How do I know if you took me down right?
He shows her the pad.
What's that? That ain't proper writing. I can't read that.
Cheer up, Captain. And buy a flare off a poor girl.
Oh, it's because I called him Captain.
Why not?
Oh, but I meant no harm.
Why?
Oh, sir. Oh, don't let him charge me. Oh, you don't know what it means to me. They'll take away my character and they'll drive me on the streets as big as a gentleman.
Charge? I make no charge. Really, sir, you needn't start protecting me from molestation until I ask you. Anyone can see the girl meant no harm.
It's your business.
Taking down people's words.
You never said a word to him.
What harm did she do?
Don't be ridiculous. Who's hurting you, you silly girl? What do you take me for?
It's all right. He ain't a copper. He's a gentleman. Look at his boots.
Gentleman? He's a blooming busybody, that's what he is.
Right. How are all your people down in Selsey?
What?
And how do you come to be so far east? You were born in Lisson Grove.
Oh, but what harm is am I leaving Lisson Grove? It wasn't fit for a pig to live in, and I had to pay 4 and 6 a week.
Live where you like, but for heaven's sake, stop making that noise.
Come, no one's going to harm you. You've a perfect right to live where you please.
Block Lane, for instance.
I'm a good girl, I am.
Here, do you know where I come from?
Hoxton.
Well, who said I didn't? Blimey, you know everything you do.
Where's your warrant?
Yes. Catch him trying to take liberties with a gentleman.
Yes. Tell him where he comes from if you want to go fortune telling.
Go on.
Go on, tell him.
All right. Cheltenham, Harrow, Cambridge, India.
That's right.
The man in the overcoat moves away.
He's no gentleman. He ain't tend to be here with a poor girl.
What on earth can Freddy be doing? I shall get pneumonia if I stay in this draft any longer.
Earl's Court.
Will you please keep your impertinent remarks to yourself?
Did I say that out loud? I'm so sorry. Your mother's Epsom and mistaken me.
Oh, how very curious. You know, I was brought up in Large Lady Park near Epsom.
That's a devil of a name, isn't it? Oh, excuse me. Are you looking for a cab?
Don't you dare to speak to me. Oh, please, Clara. Yes, we should be so grateful to you if you could find us a cab.
I don't know whether you've noticed it, but it stopped raining.
Oh, so it has. Clara, we'll walk to a bus.
A cab.
He drops his notepad as the man in the bowler hat and the gentleman with the moustache approach him.
I can tell where you come from.
Can you?
Hanwell Insane Asylum.
Hanwell. Insane.
Both? Thank you, teacher.
He doffs his bowler.
Ho, ho.
May I ask, sir, do you do this for a living in a music hall?
Well, I have thought of doing so. Perhaps I shall someday.
Then how on earth do you do it?
Simply phonetics. The science of speech. That's my profession.
Is it?
Yes, it's also my hobby. You see, you can spot a Yorkshireman or an Irishman by his brogue. But I can place any man within 6 miles. I can place it within 2 miles in London.
Eliza walks by them.
Sometimes, as in the case of this girl, within 2 streets.
He frowns at Eliza.
him mind his own business and leave a poor girl of mine her own business.
Woman, cease this detestable boo-hooing instantly.
I've a right to be here if I like. Same as you.
A woman who utters such depressing and disgusting sounds has no right to be anywhere.
Ooh.
Remember that you're a human being with a soul, the divine gift of articulate speech, and that your language is the language of Milton, Shakespeare, and the Bible. And don't sit there crooning like a bilious pigeon.
Oh!
Ow! Heavens, what a sound! You see this creature with her curbstone English? The English that will keep her in the gutter for the rest of her days? Well, sir, in 3 months I could pass her off as a duchess at an ambassador's reception.
No, no, no.
Yes, I could even get her a job as a lady's maid or a shop assistant, which requires better English.
You mean you could make me?
Yes, you squashed cabbage leaf. You disgrace to the noble architecture of these columns. You incarnate insult to the English language. I could pass you off as the Queen of Sheba.
She believes him for a moment, then smiles.
Yeah.
You don't believe that, do you, Captain?
Well, everything is possible. I myself am a student of Indian dialects.
Are you?
Yes.
Have you ever heard of Colonel Pickering, the author of Spoken Sanskrit?
I am Colonel Pickering.
No.
Yes. Who are you?
Henry Higgins.
No.
Yes, the author of Higgins' Universal Alphabet.
You know, I came all the way from India to meet you.
And I was just going all the way to India to meet you. Where are you staying?
Carlton.
No, you're not. You're staying at 27A Wimpole Street.
Come on.
Oh, buy a flower, kind sir. I'm short for my lodging.
Oh, you liar. You just said you could change half a crown.
You want to be stuffed with nails, you are. Here, take the old blooming basket for sixpence.
As Higgins is about to lead Pickering away, he hears the choir.
A reminder.
He tips his hat. Digs in his pocket. And drops a handful of change into the basket. Graciously, he presents the basket to Eliza, who is dumbfounded.
Come on, Pickering. This is a wonderful
thing. Eliza gathers up the money as a taxi pulls up.
Oh, excuse me, have you seen those two ladies who were here just now?
Oh, they went to the bus when the rain stopped.
And left me with a cab on my hands. Oh, blah.
Never mind, young man. I'm going home in a taxi.
Here, wait a minute.
18 pence ain't no object to me, Charlie.
She climbs in the back of the cab.
Buckingham Palace and step on it. Start, Freddy.
Well, I'll be dashed.
The old Buckingham Palace.
How much, dearie?
It'll cost you a bob.
Dear, you're a robber, you are. Eat this rice, Paul. A bob for 2 minutes.
Ever been in a taxi before?
Hundreds and thousands of times.
She runs toward her building. Excitedly, she enters her flat. She pulls back her hat and then lights a lamp. She crosses the room to a birdcage. She shakes the money in her hands, then sits at her dresser and drops the coins into her lap. Looking at herself in the mirror, she remembers Higgins' boast. She pulls at her long, tangled hair, makes a face, and then gazes dreamily into the mirror once again. Sound waves are displayed on an oscilloscope. Higgins and Pickering look at a large model of a human ear.
As you see, my dear Pick, the human ear is a perfect recording and amplifying apparatus.
The room is filled with sound recording equipment.
Well, tired of listening to sounds? Amazing.
Higgins pushes a ceramic Buddha closer to Pickering.
Do you know, I rather fancied myself because I could pronounce 24 distinct vowel sounds. Your 130 beat me. I can't hear any difference between most of them.
Oh, it comes from practice, you know.
Do you know, I rather fancy myself because I could pronounce 24 distinct vowel sounds. Good heaven, you're 130.
Pickering points to the large speaker as Higgins lifts the Buddha.
Concealed microphone. For unsuspecting victims. What is it, Mrs. Pierce?
A young woman wants to see you, sir.
Young woman, what does she want?
She says you'll be glad when you know what she's come about. She's a very common girl, sir. I'd have got rid of her, only you see such queer people sometimes.
All right. Has she an interesting accent?
Just dreadful, sir.
Good. Show her up at once.
As he reaches for a chocolate, Mrs. Pierce frowns and moves them to the piano.
You know, this is really a bit of luck. We'll set her talking, I'll take it down in my phonetic shorthand. Then we'll get her on the machine. You can turn her on as often as you like.
Have a wee. Here's the young woman, sir.
Eliza enters the living room wearing her best coat and hat.
Oh, it's you! Oh, she's no use. I've got all the records I want of the Listen Grove lingo. Be off with you, I don't want you.
Yeah, don't you be so saucy. You ain't heard what I come for yet.
Did you tell him I come in a taxi?
You think a gentleman like Mr. Higgins cares what you came in?
Oh, we are proud, aren't we? Well, he ain't above giving lessons, not him heard him say so. And if my money's not good enough, I can go elsewhere.
Good enough for what?
Good enough for you. So now you know, don't you?
Higgins is at the piano.
I'm come to have lessons, I am. And to pay for them too, make no mistake.
Well, I say, Pickering, shall we ask this object to sit down, or shall we throw her out of the window?
I won't be called an object when I've offered to pay like any lady.
What is it you want, my dear?
I want to be a lady in a flower shop. Instead of selling in Piccadilly Circus. They won't take me unless I can talk more genteel. Well, he said he could teach me. Here I am, I'm ready to pay. I'm not asking any favours. He treats me as if I was dirt. I know what lessons cost, and I'm ready to pay.
How much?
I'm now you're talking. I thought you'd come off it when you saw a chance of getting back a bit of the money what you checked at me last night. You'd had a drop, hadn't you?
Sit down.
If you're going to make a compliment of it.
Sit down. What's your name?
Eliza Doolittle.
Won't you sit down, Miss Doolittle?
Oh, I don't mind if I do.
Pleased by his kindness, she sits demurely.
How much do you propose to pay me for the lessons?
Oh, I know what's right. A lady friend of mine, she gets French lessons at 18 pence an hour from a real French gentleman. Well, you wouldn't have the nerve to ask the same for teaching me my own language as what you would for French. So I won't give you more than a shilling. Take it or leave it.
I'll take it. You know, Pickering, a shilling to this girl is worth 60 or 70 pounds to a millionaire. It's handsome, it's enormous, it's the biggest offer I've ever had.
60 pounds? Well, what are you talking about? I never offered you 60 pounds.
Hold your tongue.
Well, I ain't got 60 pounds.
Oh, Gerald, nobody's going to touch your money.
Somebody's going to touch you with a broomstick if you don't stop snivelling. Sit down, will you?
Sure. Anyone would think he was my father.
Higgins, I'm interested. What about that boast of yours that you could pass her off as a duchess at an ambassador's reception?
Well, what about it?
I'll say you're the greatest teacher alive if you make that good. I'll bet you all the expenses of the experiment you can't do it. And I'll pay for the lessons.
Oh, you're real good.
Come here.
Oh, thank you, Captain.
Come here, sit down.
Higgins leads her to the chair near the sound equipment.
This is almost irresistible.
He turns on the equipment.
She's so deliciously low. So horribly dirty.
Oh, I ain't dirty. I wash my face and hands before I come, I did.
I shall make a duchess of this draggle-tailed gutter snipe.
Oh!
In 6 months, in three, if she has a good ear and a quick tongue, I'll take her anywhere and pass her off as anything. We start today, now, this minute. Mrs. Pierce, take her away and clean her. Take off all her clothes and burn them. Bring up and order some new ones. Wrap her up in brown paper till they come.
You're no gentleman, you ain't to talk of such things. I'm a good girl, I am. And I know what the likes of you are, I do.
We want none of your slum prudery here, young woman. You've got to learn to behave like a duchess. Here, take her away, Mrs. Pierce. If she gives any trouble, wallop.
No, call the police, I
have no place to put her.
Put her in the ash can.
You can't dig a girl up like that as if you were picking a pebble off the beach.
Why not?
She may be married.
Gah. There you are, as the girl very properly says. Gah.
Who would marry me?
By George, Eliza, before I've done with you, the streets will be strewn with the bodies of men shooting themselves for your sake.
Yeah, he's off his chump. He is. I'm going. I don't want no loonies teaching me.
Oh, I'm mad, am I? Very well, Mrs. Pierce, don't order those things. Throw her out.
Stop, Mr. Higgins. I won't allow it. Go home to your mother, Gerald.
I ain't got no mother.
There you are. She ain't got no mother. Very well, then the girl doesn't belong to anybody. She's no use to anybody but me.
What's to become of her? Is she to be paid anything? Do be sensible, Mr. Higgins.
Now, what on earth will she do with money? She'll get her food and her clothes. She'll only drink if you give her money.
It's a lie. Nobody ever saw the sign of liquor on me.
Doesn't it occur to you, Higgins, that the girl has some feelings?
Oh, I don't think so.
Have you, Eliza?
I got my feelings the same as anyone else.
You see the difficulty, Pickering?
What difficulty? To get her to talk grammar.
I don't want to talk grammar. I want to talk like a lady.
Will you please keep to the point, Mr. Higgins? What's to become of her when you've finished with her teaching?
What's to become of her if we leave her in the gutter?
That's her business, not yours, Mr. Higgins.
Well, when we've finished with her, we throw her back in the gutter.
Oh, you've no feeling art in you. You haven't. I'm going away. I've had enough of this. You ought to be ashamed of yourself.
Here, Eliza.
She runs from him.
Come here, Eliza. Here, Eliza.
He follows her up the stairs with a box of chocolates.
Have a chocolate, Eliza.
How do I know what might be in them? If the girl's being drugged by the like of you.
He puts one in her mouth.
Glad you're good faith, Eliza.
I'm too lazy to take it out of my mouth.
You shall have boxes of them, Eliza. You shall live on them.
He gives her the box, then stands above her on the stairs.
Now listen to me, Eliza. You're going to live here for 6 months and learn to speak beautifully like a lady in a florist shop. If you're good and do whatever you're told, you shall sleep in a proper bedroom, have lots to eat, and money to buy chocolates and take rides in taxis. If you're naughty and idle, you shall sleep in the back kitchen among the black beetles and be walloped by Mrs. Pierce with a broomstick. At the end of 6 months, you shall go to Buckingham Palace in a carriage, beautifully dressed. If the king finds out you're not a lady, you will be taken by the guards to the Tower of London, where your head will be cut off as a warning to other presumptuous flower girls. But if you are not found out, you will receive a present of 7 and 6 to start life with as a lady in a shop. If you refuse this offer, you will be a most ungrateful and wicked girl, and the angels will weep for you.
Higgins returns to the living room.
Now are you satisfied, Pickering? Can I put it more fairly, Mrs. Pierce? Thunder, off to the bathroom.
He walks to the sound equipment.
You're a great bully, you are. And I won't stay here if I don't like it. I never asked to go to Buckingham Palace. I didn't. If I'd known what I was letting myself in for, I wouldn't have come here. I've always been a good girl. I am the...
Oh, well,
I'm dirty. I washed my face and hands before I come, I did.
He stands by the speaker.
I shall make a duchess of this draggle-tailed gutter snipe.
Oh, no, tell him that, son. I've never had a bath in my life. Not what you call a proper one.
Nonsense, Eliza. Don't you want to be sweet and clean and decent like a lady? You know, you can't be a good girl inside if you're a dirty girl outside. Now, wait to your room and take off all your clothes.
Oh, no, it's indecent.
Nonsense, girl. Don't you take off all your clothes every night before you go to your bed?
No. Why should I? I'd catch my death. I'll take off my skirt.
Eliza, now be a good child.
No!
No, go
no!
And take your
no!
At once and come back.
If I knew what a terrible thing it must have been, I shouldn't have come here. I didn't know when I was well off on it. It ain't decent.
Mrs. Pierce closes the bathroom door. Pours bath salts into the tub. And then turns on the taps. She holds up a scrub brush and smiles in anticipation. Eliza shyly returns in a bathrobe, which she holds tightly at her neck. She walks apprehensively toward the tub, then backs away.
Really, I couldn't, Mrs. Gibbs. I've never done such a thing before, really, I haven't.
She gasps when she sees her reflection in the mirror and pulls the robe around her. Mrs. Pierce covers the mirror with a towel.
Now come away and tell me if the water's hot enough.
No, Mrs. Pierce, don't! No! Help! No, Mrs.
Mrs. Pierce scrubs Eliza's back. In the hall below, the men hear Eliza's screams. Higgins shrugs, while Pickering smiles in amusement. In the living room, Higgins is playing the piano.
Higgins, excuse a straight question, but are you a man of good character where women are concerned?
Have you ever known a man of good character where women are concerned?
Yes, very frequently.
Well, I haven't.
I find...
Breakfast is ready, sir.
I find that the moment I let a woman make friends with me, she becomes jealous, exacting, and a confounded nuisance. So I'm a confirmed old bachelor and likely to remain one. Coffee?
Thanks. You know what I mean. I hope it's understood that no advantage is to be taken of her position.
What, that thing?
sacred, I assure you. I've taught scores of American millionaires to speak English. The best looking women in the world. I'm seasoned. They might just as well be blocks of wood.
They sit at the breakfast table.
Excuse me, Mr. Higgins.
Mrs. Pierce enters, holding Eliza's clothes.
I'd like to trouble you, if I may.
Yes?
Will you be very particular what you say before the girl?
I'm always particular about what I say.
Oh, no, sir. It doesn't matter before me. I'm used to it. But you really must not swear before the girl.
I never swear. What the devil do you mean?
That's what I mean. I don't mind your damning and your blasting. But there's a certain word I must ask you not to use. The girl used it in the bath because the water was too hot. It begins with the same letter as bath.
I cannot charge myself with ever having uttered it. Except perhaps in moments of extreme and justifiable excitement.
Only this morning, sir, you applied it to the boots, the butter, and to the brown bread.
Oh, that, a mere alliteration, natural to a poet. Is that all?
No, sir. You'll have to be very particular with this girl as to her personal cleanliness.
Yes, certainly, certainly. Most important.
Might I ask you not to come down to breakfast in your dressing gown, or not to use it as a table napkin if you do, and will you please remember not to put the porridge saucepan onto the clean tablecloth? I hope you're not offended, sir.
No, not at all. Not at all, Mrs. Pierce. Is that all?
Oh, no, sir. I really don't think I can put the girl back into these. Might she wear one of those Chinese garments you brought back from abroad?
Certainly. What the devil's that?
She grabs Eliza's hat.
Oh, don't burn that. We'll keep that as a souvenir.
Mrs. Pierce leaves.
You know, that woman has the most extraordinary ideas about me. Here am I, a shy, diffident sort of man. Yet she's firmly persuaded that I'm a bossy, arbitrary, overbearing kind of person. How do you account for that?
I can't imagine.
I can't imagine either.
I'm afraid I've got to tell you, sir, that the trouble's beginning already. There's a dustman outside, Alfred Doolittle. He says you've got his daughter here. I don't like the looks of him, sir.
Show the blackguard in.
May not be a blackguard.
Of course he's a blackguard. We make it something interesting out of him.
What about the girl?
No, I mean his dialect.
Doolittle, sir.
A burly, rough-looking man enters in a beat-up jacket and a dustman's hat. Mrs. Pierce points Higgins out to him.
Professor Higgins?
Here. Good morning. Sit down.
Good morning, Governor. I come by a very serious matter, Governor.
Brought up in Hounslow. Mother Welsh, I should imagine. What do you want, Doolittle?
Doolittle approaches the table.
I want my daughter. That's what I want.
Well, of course you do. I'm glad to see you have some spark of family feeling left. Your daughter's upstairs. Here, take it away at once.
He gives Doolittle her hat.
What? Ah, look here, Governor. Is this reasonable? Is it fair to you? The girl belongs to me. You've got her. Where do I come in?
How dare you come here and try to blackmail me? You sent her here on purpose.
No.
This is a plot, a plant, an attempt to extort money by threats. I shall telephone the police.
Have I asked you for a brass farthing? I'll leave the gentleman here. Have I said a word about money?
What else did you come for?
But I'll tell you if you don't let me get a word in. I'm willing to tell you. I'm wanting to tell you. I'm waiting to tell you.
You know, Pickering, this fellow has a certain natural gift of rhetoric. Observe the rhythm of his native wood notes wild. I'm willing to tell you. I'm wanting to tell you. I'm waiting to tell you. The Welsh strain in him. How do you know the girl's here if you didn't send her?
Well, she sent back for her luggage, Governor. And I heard about it.
Luggage? What luggage?
Doolittle goes to the hall.
There was a musical instrument, a few pictures, a trifle of jewelry, and a bird cage. She said as how she didn't want no clothes. Well, what was I to think from that? I ask you as a parent, what was I to think?
So you came to rescue her from worse than death?
Yes, that's right, just so.
Mrs. Pierce, this is Eliza's father. He has come to rescue her from worse than death. Give her to him.
No,
take her away, Mr. Higgins. How can he? You told me to burn all her clothes.
That's right. I can't carry the girl through the streets if she's a blooming monkey, can I? Where's the clothes she come in? Did I burn them? Or did your missus here? Listen, Governor, you and me, we are men of the world, aren't we?
Oh, we're men of the world, are we? You better go, Mrs. Pierce.
I should think so, indeed.
The floor is yours, Doolittle.
I thank you kindly, Governor. Tell you the truth, I've taken a sort of fancy to you.
As Doolittle laughs in his face, Higgins recoils in disgust.
And if you want the girl, I'm not so set in having her back home, but what we mightn't be hoping to an arrangement. Regarded in the light of a young woman, she's a fine, handsome girl. As a daughter, she ain't worth a keep, I tell you straight. All I ask from you is my rights as a father. You're the last man in the world to expect me to let her go for nothing. You're one of the straight sort you are. Oh, I can see that. Well, what's a £5 note to you? And what's Eliza to me?
Doolittle laughs again, revealing his missing front teeth.
I think you ought to know, Mr. Doolittle, that Mr. Higgins' intentions are entirely honorable.
Of course they are, Governor. Of course they are. If I thought they wasn't, I'd ask 50.
Why, you callous rascal. Do you mean say you'd sell your daughter for £50?
No, no, not in a general sort of way, I wouldn't. But to oblige a gentleman like you, I'd do a good deal, I do assure you.
Oh, have you no morals, man?
I can't afford them, Governor. Well, neither could you if he was as poor as me. I don't mean no harm. But if Eliza's going to have a bit out of this, well, why not me too?
It's a matter of morals, you know. It's a positive crime to give this chap a farthing. But I do feel there's a sort of rough justice in his claim.
That's right, Governor. That's all I say. It's a father's art, as it were.
Well, I know the feeling, yet it hardly seems right.
No, no, don't look at it that way, Governor. What am I, Governor's Grove? I ask you, what am I?
Well, what are you?
I'm one of the undeserving poor. That's what I am. Well, think. Think what that means to a man. It means he's up against middle-class morality all the time. If there's anything going, I puts in for a bit of it. It's always the same story. You're undeserving, so you can't have any. And yet my needs is as great as the most deserving widow's that ever got money out of 6 different charities in 1 week for the death of the same husband. I don't need less than the deserving man, I need more. I don't eat less hearty than he does. And I drink a lot more. So I puts it to his two gentlemen, down, down, play that game on me. I'm playing straight with you. I ain't pretending to be deserving, I'm undeserving. And I mean to go on being undeserving, I likes it.
Sit down, Doolittle.
He sits at Higgins' desk and removes his hat.
Would you try and do a man out the price of his own daughter? What he's brought up, he's fed, he's clothed by the sweat of his brow, until she growed big enough to be interesting to you two gentlemen.
As he gazes at the bobbing Buddha, he loses his train of thought.
Well, is £5 unreasonable? I puts it to you, I leaves it to you.
Pickering, here, shall we give him a fiver? He'll make bad use of it, I'm afraid.
No, no, swelp me, Governor, don't be afraid. I shan't save it. Spare it to live idle on it. There won't be a penny of it left for Monday. Just one good spree for myself and the missus.
This is irresistible. Come on, let's give him 10.
No, no, thank you, Gardigan. £10, a lot of money. Makes a man feel prudent-like. And then goodbye to happiness. Just give me what I ask, Governor. Not a penny more, not a penny less.
You sure you won't take 10?
No, not now, Governor.
Come on, come on, come on.
Now, another time, perhaps. Thank you kindly, Governor.
He takes £5 and heads to the door.
Thank you, Governor's Bob.
Eliza is in the hall.
Pardon, miss?
John, don't you know your own daughter?
Blimey, it's Eliza.
Eliza struts in wearing a Chinese dress.
I never thought she'd clean up so good looking. She's a credit to me, ain't she, Governor? She'll soon pick up your free and easy ways.
Yeah, I'm a good girl, I am. And I won't pick up no free and easy ways.
Eliza, if you say again you're a good girl, your father shall take you home.
You don't know my father. All he come here for was to touch you for some money to get drunk on.
Well, what else would I want money for? Put in the plate in church, I suppose?
Mm.
Don't you give me none of your lip. Don't let me hear you give none of these gentlemen either. You'll hear from me about it. See?
Have you any further advice to give her, Doolittle, before you go? Your blessing, for instance?
No, Governor, not me. I'm not such a mug as to put up my kids to all I know myself. If you want Eliza's mind improved, Governor, do it yourself. We were strapped.
Doolittle pats his belt.
So long, gentlemen.
As Doolittle leaves, she smiles. Higgins walks toward Eliza, examining her intensely. A later the lessons are recorded, Eliza is dressed like a schoolgirl.
Like father. E. E. As in machine.
In bed, she sleeps restlessly.
Repeat after me. A. A.
A.
The rain in Spain.
Rain in Spain.
Stays mainly in the plain.
Stays mainly in the plain.
The rain in Spain stays mainly in the plains.
The rain in Spain stays mainly in the plains.
She smiles at her progress. Later, she has another restless sleep.
Now, Eliza, you see these three marbles? I want you to put them in your mouth. Yes, one, two, three. Now, don't be alarmed, it's just an exercise. Now then, repeat slowly after me. The shallow depression in the west of these islands is likely to move slowly in a westerly direction.
The shallow depression in the west of these islands is likely to move.
She spits out the marbles in horror.
No, I've swallowed one.
Don't worry, we have plenty more.
The shallow depression in the west of these islands is likely to move slowly in a more easterly direction.
Hampshire, Hereford, Hartford.
Hampshire, Hereford. Oh, lummy chumps.
So it will, Eliza, every time you say correctly. Now then, try once again. In Hampshire, Hereford, and Harford, hurricanes hardly ever happen.
In Hampshire, Hereford, Hartford, hurricanes hardly ever happen.
Hardly ever happen.
Hardly ever happen.
She blows out the flame. Eliza tosses and turns in bed. In her dreams, she sees anatomy diagrams. Higgins' scolding finger, the face of the nodding Buddha, and sound waves. Folders of recordings titled Eliza are filled and stacked.
How do you do?
Bad, bad, bad. Do it again. You aren't trying. Do it again. That's not good, Eliza. It's not bad. Now's the time to try her out on somebody.
Well,
I know. My mother.
Henry.
Hello, dear.
What are you doing here today?
This is my at-home day. You promised not to come.
Oh, brother.
Go home at once.
But I just come here on purpose. You see, dear, I picked up a girl.
You mean a girl has picked you up?
Oh, no, no, no. This isn't a love affair.
Oh, what a pity.
Why?
You never fall in love with anyone under 45.
Oh, I can't waste my time with young women. They're all such idiots, anyhow.
You know what you do if you really love me, Henry?
Get married, I suppose.
No. Stop fidgeting. And take your hands out of your pockets.
Ah.
Don't sit on that table. You'll break it. Come and tell me about the girl.
He walks toward the sofa.
Look here, she's coming to see you this afternoon.
Really? Mm. I don't remember asking her.
Oh, you didn't, and you wouldn't have if you'd known her.
Indeed. Why?
She's just a common flower girl. I picked her up in Covent Garden.
You've asked her here?
Oh, don't worry. I've taught her to speak properly. She'll stick to two subjects only, the weather and everybody's health. All that.
Oh, that's a blessing anyway.
Well, it is, and it isn't.
Now, what do you mean by that?
You see, dear, I've got her pronunciation all right, but you've got to consider not only how the girl pronounces, but what she pronounces.
Mrs. and Miss Ainsford Hill, Mr. Ainsford Hill.
Oh, heavens.
So good of you
dear,
to come.
Dear, my dear.
Freddie. How do you do?
You know my son. Oh, my son Henry.
Higgins tries to sneak out.
Miss Hill?
Delighted.
Mrs. Hill?
Enchanted.
Mr. Hill?
Thank you.
Your celebrated son. I've always so longed to meet you, Professor Higgins.
Yes, I've seen your face somewhere before. I haven't the ghost of a notion where. But it doesn't really matter. Sit down. Mother, look here.
I'm sorry to say my celebrated son has no manners. You mustn't mind him.
I don't. Colonel Pickering.
How do you do, Mrs. Higgins?
The Reverend and Mrs. Birchwood.
What, more of them?
The vicar and his wife enter.
How do you do?
Vicar?
Have you told your mother what she's come for?
No, we were interrupted, damn it.
Oh, are we in the way?
No, not at all.
No, by George, we need two or three extra people. You'll do as well as anyone else. Sit down.
Will you excuse me?
Colonel Pickering. Henry?
Freddie is holding the hat that earlier Higgins dropped in his hands.
What are you doing with my hat?
Colonel Pickering, I must know. What is the exact position in Wilmington Street? Is this girl a servant? If not, what is she?
Major and Mrs. Rawcroft.
My dear Mrs. Higgins, I really must tell you, the whole thing is extraordinarily interesting.
My dear, this is the most absorbing experiment I've ever tackled. Yes, this girl regularly fills our lives, doesn't she, Pip?
Yes, you're always talking, Eliza.
Teaching Eliza.
Dressing Eliza.
What?
She has the most amazingly quick ear you ever heard of.
Yes, just like a parrot.
My dear Mrs. Higgins, I assure you that girl is a genius.
She plays the piano perfectly.
I've taken her to
European dialects.
Mrs. Higgins gets over here from the living room.
Oh, yes. It's quite clear to me.
Too little.
Eliza enters in a beautiful lace dress and bonnet. Freddie stands. Startled, Eliza looks back at the door. She stares nervously at the room full of people. Higgins points to his mother. Eliza walks carefully toward Mrs. Higgins and then extends her hand.
How do you do, Mrs. Higgins? Professor Higgins said I might come.
Quite right, my dear. I'm delighted to see you.
Mrs. Higgins directs her toward the others.
Colonel Pickering, is it not?
How do you do, Miss Doolittle?
Pickering nods reassuringly.
Professor Higgins?
Speak to the weather and your health.
Eliza is petrified as she approaches the guests.
Mrs. Hill, Miss Doolittle.
I feel sure we've met before, Miss Doolittle. I remember your eyes. How do you do?
My Georges, it all comes back.
My daughter, Clara, how do you do?
What a confounded thing.
My son, Freddie.
How do you do?
How do you do?
I'm sure I've had the pleasure of somewhere.
Alarmed, she looks at Higgins, who motions for her to sit. Freddie holds out a chair. As she seats herself, Higgins passes her a cup of tea and a plate. He steps back to inspect.
Will it rain, do you think? The rain in Spain, they say, stays mainly in the plains.
Mrs. Higgins and her guests are confused.
They say.
How too true, Miss Doolittle. But in...
Hampshire, Hereford, and Hartford, hurricanes hardly ever happen.
The vicar is bewildered.
Do they?
Hardly ever, Miss Doolittle.
How awfully funny.
What is wrong with that, young man? I bet I got it right.
Killing.
Freddie sits beside her.
Oh, excuse me.
And takes her plate. Eliza looks at Mrs. Hill, who rolls her eyes at Freddie. The guests look down uncomfortably and stir their tea. With a nod from Higgins, Eliza lifts her spoon and carefully stirs her tea. Higgins smiles approvingly.
I do hope it won't turn cold. There's so much influenza about. It runs right through our family every spring. My aunt died of influenza.
Higgins frowns.
So they say. But it is my belief, as how they done the old woman in.
Taken aback, Higgins laughs nervously to the vicar.
Done her in? Yes, Lord love you. Why should she die of influenza when she come through diphtheria right enough the year before?
Perhaps it wasn't diphtheria. You see, vicar...
Oh, but I saw her with my own eyes. Very blue with it she was. They all thought she was dead. But my father, he kept ladling gin down her throat till she come to so sudden that she bit the bowl off the spoon.
Dear me!
Now, what call would a woman with that strength in her have to die of influenza?
Ah.
And what become of her new straw hat that should have come to me?
Well, what?
Somebody pinched it. And what I says is, them what pinched it, done her in.
Done her in?
Could you tell me?
Just the new slang, vicar.
But you surely don't believe that your aunt was killed, do I not? Them she lived with
would have killed her for a hat pin.
Let alone a hat.
But it couldn't have been right for your father to have poured spirits down her throat like that. Now, that might have killed her.
Not her. Gin was mother's milk to her.
Besides, he'd poured so much down his own throat that he knew the good of it.
Oh, how terrible for you.
Oh, it never did him no harm, what I could see. He was always more agreeable when he had a drop in. When he was out of work, my mother used to give him 2 and a kick and tell him to go out and not come home until he drunk himself cheerful and loving-like.
Charming.
There's lots of women has to make their husbands drunk to make them fit to live with. Yeah. What are you sniggering at?
The new slang. You do it so awfully well.
If I was doing it proper, what was you laughing at? Have I said anything I oughtn't?
No, not a thing, Miss Doolittle. No.
Well, that's a mercy anyhow. What I always said is...
Higgins points to his watch, then to the door. Eliza nods.
Well, I must go now. Goodbye, Mrs. Higgins. So glad to have met you.
Goodbye, my dear.
Goodbye, Vicar. Goodbye, Colonel Pickering.
Goodbye, Miss Doolittle.
Again, Higgins points to the door.
Goodbye, all.
Excuse me, Miss Doolittle, but would you be walking across the park? Because if so,
I... Walk? Not bloody likely. I'm going in a taxi.
Freddy races to open the door for Eliza. Higgins laughs as the guests stare after her, dumbfounded.
Oh, it's no use. I shall never be able to bring myself to use that word.
Oh, don't. It isn't compulsory, you know.
Back at Higgins' house, Eliza sobs on the couch.
Say what you like, but I was ashamed. You ought never to have done.
Oh, perhaps you were a bit hasty, but I'll soon put that right.
It's no use, Higgins. You'll have to face it. It isn't fair on the poor girl. Better call the whole thing off.
Nonsense. I said I'd pass the guttersnipe off as a duchess, and pass her off as a duchess I will. Here. You see that? It's an invitation from the Transylvanian Embassy. I'm going to take her there.
You're mad.
I tell you, Pig, that girl can do anything. Eliza! Eliza!
Higgins walks into the living room.
Stop sniveling, girl. Eliza, shall I give you another chance?
He kneels beside her.
Will you work?
She nods.
Good.
No, no, no.
Do it again.
I'll try.
No, no, no. I've told you 500 times. You drive me mad, girl. Come, Higgins, be reasonable. What's more? No.
Oh, I'm Mr. Freddy Hill to see Miss Doolittle.
I'll inquire, sir.
Thanks. Throw him out.
Now listen, Eliza.
She's engaged.
Mrs. Pierce shuts the door.
Miss Doolittle.
Eliza practices her entry and curtsy for Pickering and Higgins.
Oh, why can't you do it like this?
Higgins uses his robe to curtsy.
He's here again.
Hey, oh, throw him out. Come on now, both together. 1, 2, 3.
They curtsy together.
Miss Bell.
Now listen carefully, Eliza. How kind of you to let me come.
He strikes the notes on a xylophone.
Say it.
How kind of you to let me come. How kind of you to let me come.
Freddy is at the door with flowers.
Oh, it's Mr.
I know. He's here again. No good, sir.
Mrs. Pierce shuts the door in his face.
May I have the pleasure, Miss Doolittle? Get up, girl, get up. Yes, I'll be delighted.
I'll be delighted.
All right, come on then.
1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3.
Higgins and Eliza waltz into the hall.
She's no sense of timing at all. You know, watch me with Pickering. Come on, Pickering.
1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3.
Do you see what I mean? Now, once again.
In bed, Eliza reads a book on etiquette.
silence of drinking is one of the hallmarks of a lady.
Wake up, Eliza. How do you address an ambassador?
Your Excellency.
Right. Now imagine yourself standing before an archbishop. How would you address him?
Your Holiness.
No, no, no. An archbishop, not the Pope.
Your Worship.
No.
Your Majesty.
Right. Now then, an ambassador.
Your Excellency.
An archbishop.
Your Grace.
The Queen.
Your Majesty.
An archduke.
She forgets, and Higgins gets frustrated. Mrs. Pierce peeks in.
It's 3 o'clock, Mr. Higgins.
Is that all? Now then, Eliza, we'll start all over again from the beginning. An ambassador.
Your Excellency.
An archbishop.
Your Grace.
The Queen.
Your Majesty.
An archduke.
I don't know.
A cardinal.
Your Redness.
Come on, Eliza.
I don't know.
Pickering is napping on the couch.
It's 4:30, Mr. Higgins.
Now start the whole thing over from the beginning.
Oh, I can't. I can't.
Look here, if I can do it with a splitting headache, you can do it.
No, but I've got a headache. I can't.
Here, well, take this.
He puts his compress on her head.
Now then, an ambassador.
Oh, he's excellency.
Come, Higgins, be reasonable. I'm always reasonable.
The next morning.
Now then, Pickering, the time has come. Send the dressmakers, hairdressers, makeup artists, manicurists, and all the rest of the parasites.
Did you ever see the bank?
Oh, I have it. Camellia, camellia, camellia. There. Should it?
No.
A little spray of flowers.
No, no.
As the hairdressers confer on a style, Eliza receives a pedicure. A manicure. And squirms under a mud facial. Higgins eats chocolates and supervises.
More mud there.
Higgins struggles to attach his collar.
Aren't you ready yet? Almost. Nervous?
Yes, very, aren't you?
No, not a bit of it.
The collar fumbles in his hand. He looks at Pickering.
Not a bit of it.
Outside the embassy, people gather for a glimpse of the guests arriving. A taxi pulls up, and a middle-aged man in a top hat steps out of the cab and struts confidently into a grand reception hall. He passes his hat and cane to an attendant, then surveys the hall with a monocle. He greets two women in fur coats as he makes his way to a magnificent staircase. After nodding and waving to other guests, he looks toward the front doors for the new arrivals.
Maestro! Maestro!
The man kisses Higgins on both cheeks.
You remember me?
No, I don't. Where we met?
But I'm your pupil, your first pupil, your best and greatest pupil. I've made your name famous throughout Europe. You teach me phonetics. You cannot forget me. I am a Claristide Carpati.
What are you, Aristide? Why the devil don't you cut your hair?
Oh, if I cut my hair, nobody notices me. I have not your imposing appearance, your chin, your brow.
Hmm. Well, tell me, what are you doing here among all these swells?
I am indispensable at these international parties. You can place a man anywhere in London the moment he opens his mouth. I can place a man anywhere in Europe.
Excuse me, sir. I want it upstairs. Her Excellency cannot understand the Greek gentleman.
Oh, indeed. I'll come at once. This Greek diplomat who pretends he cannot speak or understand English. He cannot deceive me. A tout à l'heure, mon vieux.
Carpathy heads upstairs.
Is that Carpathy fellow really an expert?
My best pupil. But heaven help the master who's judged by his disciples.
But if you beat Eliza, we're done. Don't just bother about the bit. Let's go home.
Oh, rubbish, that idiot.
Pickering draws Higgins' attention to Eliza. She stands across from them, transformed in a full-length satin gown, long white gloves, pearl necklace, and tiara. Stiffly, she walks toward them.
Well, Eliza, now we're in for it. Are you ready?
She nods.
Come on in.
She walks between them up the stairs.
That fellow found us about Eliza. He'll blackmail us.
Let him try.
Her Grace, the Duchess of Care.
Standing at the rail above, Carpathy notices Eliza.
Admiral Sir Charles Brown Halbert. Miss Elizabeth Doolittle, Colonel Pickering. Professor Higgins.
At the top of the stairs, Higgins, Pickering, and Eliza walk toward the ballroom.
And Miss Du Lingua.
How do you do, Colonel Pickering?
How do you do? May I present Miss Elizabeth Doolittle?
How do you do? How kind of you to let me come. Oh, not at all.
Intrigued, the ambassadress watches Eliza walk away.
The Mrs. Milka.
Good evening.
Oh, Professor, good evening. Who is the charming girl you brought? Is she a relation?
Not of mine, no.
She has such a faraway look, as if she always lived in a garden.
So she has. A sort of garden.
There is one thing I have observed about the English, Duchess. And that is...
Yes, I adore observing the English. Let's go and observe them now. Come along, George. Dear, such a bore about the English. And quite wrong, like every ambassador. Oh, look, there's dear old Lily Fantail with a whole of Kew Gardens on her head.
You have a rival here tonight. He introduced himself as your pupil. Is he any good?
He can learn a language in a fortnight. Knows dozens of them. The sure mark of a fool.
Your Excellency is interested in Miss Doolittle?
Yes. Could you find out who she is?
Excellency.
Lord Wilsham and Lady Wilsham.
I feel rather like Noah standing on the bridge watching the loading of the ark. You know, two of everything.
Colonel Pickering.
Tell me more about your Greek gentleman friend.
A gentleman. He's the son of a clerk and a watchmaker. He speaks English so villainously that he dare not utter a word of it without betraying his origin. I help him to pretend, but I make him pay through the nose. I make them all pay. Professor Higgins, I should be delighted if you would present me to this Miss Doolittle.
No, you don't. Can't you see she's talking to a duchess?
Higgins steers Carpathy away, but quickly loses him.
Professor Higgins, the very man I've been dying to meet. I'm Isabella the Sun.
Nothing of the bell.
What extraordinary people seem to get in everywhere nowadays.
Extraordinary.
Colonel Pickering, unfortunately we were interrupted. Would you be so kind as to introduce me to Miss
Duell?
You remember you so kindly addressed the Guild of the Navy Officers?
Oh, yes. Excuse me, but I've...
Well, this time...
Concerned, Higgins looks back at Carpathy.
Enchanted.
Carpathy kisses Eliza's hand. The Duchess leads Pickering away.
I don't believe it's true.
Leaving Eliza to Carpathy. They chat. And then later mingle with the ambassadress and the young man.
Miss Doolittle has a delicious sense of humor.
Eliza takes the young man's arm and they walk off.
One thing more, Professor. Do tell me.
Yes, Miss Doolittle. I have found out all about her.
Well,
she's a...
Carpathy's report to the ambassadress is interrupted by an attendant. Higgins escapes from the two women.
Well, now, go on.
I say, Pickering, you know what's happened.
The guests part to make way for a grand old lady, accompanied by the ambassador, as she ceremoniously walks through the hall. Higgins and Pickering look on as she greets the guests. Eliza curtsies before her, and the grand old lady touches her cheek.
Charming.
Carpathy watches smugly.
Miss Doolittle.
Higgins nudges Pickering. Continuing down the receiving line, the grand old lady nods to the guests on either side. Higgins and Pickering bow. The ambassador escorts her to a small sofa.
My dear fellow, I hope you don't think I reduced that Carpathy chap to Eliza to win my bid.
Oh, nonsense. But the game's all up, Pickering. He's found out all about her.
They watch an attendant approach Eliza.
I say, Pick, look at that.
And accompany her as she walks elegantly through the crowd of curious guests to where the grand old lady sits with the ambassadress. Eliza curtsies.
Who is she? I can't imagine.
My child, my son would very much like to dance with you.
As Higgins and Pickering look at each other in surprise, the grand old lady's son takes Eliza's arm. Carpathy smiles to himself. as the couple walk slowly between the guests to the ballroom. Higgins beams with satisfaction. On the dance floor, Eliza gracefully drapes the train of her dress over her arm and they begin to dance. The other guests join them. Carpathy observes Eliza, then looks knowingly at Higgins.
If he gives the game away to the ambassadors, there'll be the deuce of a row. I wouldn't miss it for worlds. Excuse me.
Carpathy continues to stare at the dancing couple. Transfixed, he waves off a waiter's offer of champagne.
Come on, Aristide, you've got to tell us.
Nothing.
Yes, tell us all you know about this Miss Doolittle.
No, that is my secret.
Oh.
But I will tell Your Excellency. She has a right to know who Miss Doolittle is.
Well, who is she?
She is a...
Don't start.
Oh, no. She's a fraud.
Oh, no.
Yes, she cannot deceive me. Her name cannot be Doolittle.
Why?
Because Doolittle is an English name and she is not English.
Oh.
But she speaks it perfectly.
Too perfectly. Can you show me any English woman who speaks English as it should be spoken? There is no such thing. The English do not know how to speak their own language. Only foreigners who have been taught to speak it, speak it well.
Yes, there's something in that.
But if she's not English, what is she?
Hungarian,
and of royal blood. I am Hungarian. My blood is royal.
Did you speak to her in Hungarian?
I did. She was very clever. She said, please speak to me in English. I do not understand French. French! She pretended not to know the difference between Hungarian and French. Nonsense, she knows both.
And the blood royal. How did you find that out?
Instinct, maestro. Instinct. Only the Hungarian, the Magyar race, can produce that air of the divine right, those high cheekbones, those resolute eyes. She is a princess.
The crowd parts as the couple dances from one room to another. Higgins and Carpathy watch along with the other guests. Pickering nods and winks at Higgins as Eliza dances beautifully.
Now I know who it is.
Who?
Oh, look at her profile. It's the old Duke himself.
Once again, the dance floor fills up. Pickering smiles with pride as he watches Eliza.
What do you say, Professor?
I say an ordinary Cockney girl out of the gutter. I place her in Covent Garden.
Maestro, you are mad on the subject of Cockney dialects. The London gutter is the whole world for you. This girl is undoubtedly a
princess. Have it your own way, Maestro. Have it your own way.
Back at Higgins' house, Eliza slowly opens the door to the darkened living room. Frowning, she moves behind the door to turn on the lights.
Mrs. Pearson, please. We don't want any else, shall we?
No.
What, say, Mrs. Pearson arrives, leaves his light about here.
Oh, she'll pick him up. She'll think we were drunk.
There we are. Slicey. Were there any letters? Didn't look.
She stands in the shadows unnoticed.
Heavens, what an evening. What a crew. What silly tomfoolery. Thank God it's all over.
Say, what the devil are my slippers?
Well, you won your bet. Eliza did the trick and something to spare.
Oh, it was interesting enough at first, but afterwards I got deadly sick of it. The whole thing's been a perfect bore.
Oh, come, the reception was frightfully exciting.
For the first 3 minutes. But as soon as I saw we were going to win hands down, I lost interest. No more artificial duchesses for me.
Oh, they're there, are they?
I must say Eliza did it awfully well. You see, lots of the real people can't do it at all.
The silly fools don't even know their own silly business.
Anyhow, that's all over and done with. Now I can go to bed without dreading tomorrow.
Well, I shall turn in too. Still, it's been a great triumph for you.
Yes, it has, rather, hasn't it?
Marvellous. Good night.
Good night, all right. Good
night, Eliza. Put out the lights, Eliza. Tell Mrs. Pearce not to bring me coffee in the morning. I'll take tea.
Higgins leaves Eliza, sitting motionless and staring straight ahead. she slowly gets up and walks numbly across the room. Clenching her fists, she collapses on the side of the armchair. She is shaking. Higgins returns to the living room.
I put my slippers.
She looks up in a rage and then throws his slippers at him.
There are your slippers, and there! Take your slippers! And me, you never have a day's luck with them.
What's the matter? Anything wrong?
No, nothing wrong with you. I've won your bets, you haven't I? That's all that counts. I don't matter, I suppose.
You won my bet. You presumptuous insect, I won it. Why did you throw those slippers at me?
It's because I wanted to smash your face in. I'd like to kill you, you brute. Why didn't you leave me where you found me? In the gutter. You thank God it's all over and that you can throw me back again there now, do you?
Well, well, well. The creature is nervous after all. Would you? Don't you dare show your temper to me. Sit down and be quiet.
What's to become of me? What's to become of me?
How the devil do I know what's to become of you? What does it matter what becomes of you?
You don't care. I know you don't care. You wouldn't care if I was dead. I'm nothing to you. Not so much as them slippers.
Those slippers.
Made any difference now?
May I ask whether you complain of your treatment here?
No.
Has anyone behaved badly to you? Colonel Pickering, Mrs. Pierce, any of the servants?
No.
I presume you don't pretend that I've treated you badly.
No.
Ah, well, I'm glad to hear that anyway. Probably you're tired after the strain of the day. Here. Have a chocolate.
No.
No?
No. Thank you.
Well, it's all over now. Nothing more to worry about.
No. Nothing more for you to worry about.
Eliza is so overcome with despair, she can hardly stand up.
Oh, God. I wish I was dead.
Why? In heaven's name, why? Now listen to me, Eliza.
He walks over to her as she stands by the window.
All this irritation is purely subjective.
I don't understand. I'm too ignorant.
It's only imagination. Low spirits, nothing more. Nobody's trying to hurt you, nothing's wrong. Now you go to bed like a good girl and sleep it off. Have a little cry and say your prayers, and that'll make you comfortable.
I heard your prayers. Thank God it's all over.
Well, don't you thank God it's all over? Now you're free, you can do what you like.
What am I fit for? What have you left me fit for? Where am I to go? What am I to do?
She sits in an armchair and looks up at him.
What's to become of me?
Oh, so that's what's worrying you, is it? Oh, you'll settle down somewhere or other.
He frowns.
But I hadn't quite realized you were going away.
Turning away, he stops in front of a bowl of fruit. He tosses his cigar aside, then picks up an apple.
You might marry, you know. You're not bad looking. Quite a pleasure to look at you sometimes. Of course, now you've been crying, you look as ugly as the very devil, but when you're quite all right and yourself, you're what I should call attractive. That is to people in the marrying line, you understand. Now you go to bed, have a good night's rest. Get up in the morning and look at yourself in the glass. You won't feel so cheap.
He walks by her to the window.
I dare say my mother could find some chap or other who'll do very well.
We were above that in Covent Garden.
What do you mean?
I sold flowers. I didn't sell myself. Now you've made a lady of me, I'm not fit to sell anything else. I wish you'd left me where you found me.
But you don't have to marry the fellow if you don't like him.
What else am I to do?
Well, lots of things. How about your old idea of a florist shop? Pickering could set you up in one. He's got lots of money. Oh, you'll be all right.
He goes to her, looks into her eyes, then stops himself.
I must clear off to bed. I'm devilish sleepy.
He pauses and looks around.
By the way, I came here for something. Forget what it was.
Your slippers.
Oh, yes, of course. You shied them at me.
She stands proudly.
Before you go, sir.
Eh?
Do my clothes belong to me or to Colonel Pickering?
What the devil use do they be to Pickering?
You might want them for the next girl you pick up to experiment on.
Is that the way you feel towards us?
I don't want to hear any more about that. All I want to know is what belongs to me and what doesn't. My own clothes were burnt.
What's it matter? Why need you start bothering about that in the middle of the night?
I want to know what I may take away with me. I don't want to be accused of stealing.
Stealing? Liza, you shouldn't have said that. That shows a want of feeling.
I'm sorry. I'm only a common, ignorant girl. And in my station, I have to be careful. There can't be any feelings between the like of you and the like of me. Will you please tell me what belongs to me and what doesn't?
Oh, you can keep the whole confounded houseful if you like. All except the jewels, they're hired. Will that satisfy you?
Stop, thief. Will you take these to your room and keep them safe? I don't want to run the risk of them being missing.
Hand them over. If these belong to me instead of the jeweler, I'd ram them down your ungrateful throat.
This ring...
She looks down at it sadly.
It isn't the jeweler. It's the one you bought me in Brighton. I don't want it now.
She takes it off. He swipes the ring into the fireplace.
Hit you, you infamous creature. How dare you accuse me of such a thing? It's you who have hit me. You've wounded me to the heart.
I'm glad. Glad. I've got a little of my own back anyhow.
You've caused me to lose my temper. A thing that's hardly ever happened to me before. I prefer to say nothing more tonight. I shall go to bed.
He turns and marches out the door. Eliza runs after him.
Damn Mrs. Pierce, and damn the coffee, and damn you, and damn my own folly in having lavished hard-earned knowledge and the treasure of my regard and intimacy on a heartless guttersnipe.
He stumbles. Then, trying to regain his dignity, he marches stiffly up the staircase and into his room. Eliza stares after him, then lowers her head in tears. She touches her ring finger, then runs to the fireplace. And retrieves the ring from the hot coals. Sobbing, she cleans the ring and rubs it between her fingers. Suddenly, a look of determination crosses her face. She drops the ring and stands. Upstairs, Eliza slips out of her evening gown, removes her tiara and her hairpiece, and changes into a modest dress. Grabbing her hat and purse, she leaves her room. She descends the darkened staircase, looks back, then continues to the front hall. Angrily, she glances upstairs, then rushes out. Freddy is standing out front.
What are you doing here?
Nothing. As a matter of fact, I spend most of my nights here. It's the only place I feel really happy. Don't laugh at me, Miss Doolittle.
Don't you call me Miss Doolittle. Eliza's good enough for me.
Where are you going?
To the river.
What for?
To make a hole in it.
To make a hole in it?
Freddy, you don't think I'm a heartless guttersnipe, do you?
No, darling. How can you imagine such a thing? I think you're the most wonderful, the loveliest...
He kisses her.
Now then, now then, now then. This isn't Paris, you know.
No, sorry, Constable.
Eliza walks away and Freddy follows.
Eliza. Eliza, you let me kiss you.
Oh, why not? Why shouldn't someone kiss me? Why shouldn't someone be in love with me? Kiss me again. Kiss me again.
All right.
He embraces and kisses her.
Well, then you two, what's this?
Eliza slips away.
Are you annoying that young lady?
No, no, Constable, certainly not.
Move along, then. Double quick.
As you say, sir.
In the midst of early morning preparations at Covent Garden, Eliza apprehensively returns to her old haunts. Her old friend recognizes her.
Well, if it ain't...
Eliza looks down as her friend registers how much Eliza has changed.
Beg your pardon.
Smiling, she holds out a bouquet of flowers.
Buy a flower for poor girl.
Staring at the flowers, Eliza awkwardly, and then with a smile, pulls a coin from her purse. She gives it to her friend, who accepts it gladly and walks away beaming. Trying to come to terms with her two vastly different worlds, Eliza looks out at Covent Garden and shakes her head. Confused and disheartened, she wanders aimlessly through the market and bumps into an old woman with a basket. As if waking from a trance, Eliza looks around and then turns to leave. As she leaves her old life behind her, she quickens her pace and drops her flowers. As the drapes are drawn, the sun falls on Higgins, who is in bed sleeping.
Sir? Your coffee, sir.
Didn't Eliza tell you to bring tea?
She didn't wait to tell me. She's gone.
Gone?
I said gone, and I meant it, every word of it.
Higgins rifles through his desk.
Mrs. Pierce, where the devil's my engagement book? I don't know any of my appointments.
Eliza would know.
But she isn't here, damn it.
Then you'd better find her, damn it.
What does that Aspen inspector say? Have you offered a reward?
Shh.
What?
Pickering is on the phone.
You can't help us find her? What are the police for, in heaven's name? Why really think they suspect us of some improper purpose? Of course, I don't care what becomes of her. Where the devil can she be?
Higgins and Pickering get out of the cab and cross the street to the flower girls at Piccadilly Circus.
Have you seen Eliza Doolittle?
No.
Later, they run up the stairs at Mrs. Higgins' house and burst into the living room.
I say, Mother, hear the confounded thing.
Good morning, my dear. What is it?
Eliza's bolted.
Good morning, Colonel Pickering.
Eliza's bolted. What am I to do?
Do without, I'm afraid, Henry. The girl has a perfect right to leave if she chooses.
But something may have happened to her. Because it's a girl like this, what are we to do?
You've no more sense, either of you, than two children. You must have frightened the poor girl.
Frightened her? I hardly said a word to her. Did you bully her after I went to bed?
Well, certainly not. Exactly the other way about. She threw the slippers in my face. The moment I entered the room, the slippers came bang in my face before I'd uttered a word. And she used the most perfectly awful language.
He sits on the piano.
I can't say I'm surprised. And you mean to tell me that after all her hard work, and after doing this wonderful thing for you without making one single mistake, you two sat there and hardly said a word to her?
Well, we didn't make speeches, if that's what you mean.
You didn't thank her, pet her, admire her? And she only threw the slippers at you. I'd have thrown the fire irons at you.
Puffing on his pipe, Higgins frowns.
Mr. Henry, a gentleman wants to see you most particular.
Oh, bother, I can't see anybody now.
He's been sent down from Wimpole Street.
Who is it?
Mr. Doolittle, sir.
Doolittle? A dustman?
Dustman? Oh, no, sir. A gentleman.
All right, show him in. By George, Pick, this is some relative of hers she's gone to. Someone we know nothing about. Genteel relations. Now we shall hear something.
Higgins goes to the stairs.
Doolittle?
Doolittle arrives in top hat and tails.
What the dickens has happened to you?
Henry Higgins, did you see this? Look at this. You've done this.
Done what, man?
Look at this hat. Look at this coach.
Good morning, Mr. Doolittle. Won't you come in?
Thank you, ma'am.
What has my son done to you?
He's ruined me, destroyed my happiness, tied me up and delivered me into the hands of middle-class morality.
You're raving, you're drunk, you're mad. I gave you £5. After that, I had two conversations with you at half a crown an hour. I've never even seen you since.
Oh, mad am I? Drunk am I?
Tell me this. Did you or did you not write your old blotter in America? To say the most original moralist at present in England was Alfred Doolittle, a common garbage man. Well, Ezra D. Wonderfeller Jr.,
Oh, I remember making some silly joke of the kind.
Oh, you might well call it a silly joke. It's put the lid on me right enough.
Just give him the chance he was looking for. To show Americans isn't like us. That they recognize and respect merit in whatever class of life. However humble. Them words is in his blooming will. In which he leaves me £3,000 a year. On condition I lecture for the Wanapeller Moral Reform League. As often as they ask me, up 6 times a year.
But this solves the problem of Eliza's future. You can provide for her now.
Yes, I'm expected to provide for everybody now at £3,000 a year.
He shan't provide for her. She doesn't belong to him. I paid him £5 for her. Doolittle, you're either an honest man or you're a rogue.
A little of both. Henry, like the rest of us, a little of both.
The point is, have you found Eliza?
Have you lost her?
Yes.
Blimey, you have all the luck you have. No, I ain't found her, but she'll find me quick enough now. That's what you've done to me.
Now, you listen to me.
Could you wait here for a moment, Mr. Doolittle?
They step into the living room.
Henry, I have a surprise for you. Do you really want to know where Eliza is?
Yes, where is she?
She says she's willing to meet you on friendly terms. And let bygones be bygones.
Is she, by God?
Pickering, where is she?
Now promise to behave yourself, Henry.
She opens the doors and reveals Eliza in the next room.
Good morning, Colonel Pickering. Quite chilly this morning, isn't it?
Eliza walks into the living room and makes herself at home on the couch with some sewing. She looks up.
Oh, how do you do, Professor Higgins? Are you quite well? But of course you are. You're never ill.
Higgins scowls.
Won't you sit down, Colonel Pickering?
As Pickering goes to the couch, Higgins approaches Eliza with his hands on his hips.
Don't you dare try this game on with me.
Get up and come home and don't be a fool.
Very nicely put indeed, Henry. No woman could resist such an invitation.
Let her speak for herself. There isn't an idea that I haven't put into her head. I tell you, I've created this thing out of squashed cabbage leaves in Covent Garden.
Eliza smiles.
Now she pretends to play the fine lady with me.
Will you drop me altogether now the experiment is over, Colonel Pickering?
Oh, you mustn't think of it as an experiment.
Oh, I'm only a squashed cabbage leaf.
Higgins slams down a newspaper.
But I owe so much to you that I should be very unhappy if you forgot me. You see, it was from you that I learned really nice manners. And that's what makes one a lady, isn't it?
Ah.
And that's what makes the difference, after all.
No doubt. Still, he taught you to speak, you know, and I couldn't have done that.
Of course, that was his profession. It was just like learning to dance in the fashionable way. Nothing more than that in it. Do you know what began my real education?
No.
You're calling me Miss Doolittle, that day when I first came to Wimpole Street. That was the beginning of self-respect for me. You see, the difference between a lady and a flower girl isn't how she behaves. It's how she's treated. I know that I should always be a flower girl to Professor Higgins because he always treats me as a flower girl and always will.
Don't grind your teeth, Henry.
But I know that I can be a lady to you because you always treat me as a lady and always will.
Well, that's very nice of you to say so, Miss Doolittle.
I should like you to call me Eliza now, if you would.
Thank you.
He holds her hand affectionately.
Eliza.
She looks at Higgins, who pretends to read the paper.
And I should like Professor Higgins to call me Miss Doolittle.
He jumps up.
You damn first.
Henry?
But you're coming back, aren't you?
You'll forgive Higgins.
Forgive? Will she, by George? Let her go.
Doolittle enters.
Let her find out what it's like to be without us. In 3 weeks, you'll relapse back into the gutter without me at her elbow.
You won't relapse, will you, Eliza?
No, never again. I don't believe I could utter one of those old sounds if I tried.
She sees her father.
Oh. Ha ha! What did I tell you? Victory! Victory! Ow! 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 Ow!
Henry!
Ow!
Eliza, it's not my fault. Your stepmother.
Eliza runs out of the room.
Henry, look, Henry.
Higgins follows her.
Colonel, I'm getting late for the wedding.
Wedding? What wedding?
Mine.
Yours?
Yes, in spite of all I've said and done, my wife, she's going to marry me. I'm feeling uncommon nervous about the ceremony, Governor. Will you come and put me through it?
You've been through it before. You were married to Eliza's mother.
Who told you that, Governor?
Well, nobody told me, but I concluded naturally.
No, that ain't the natural way, Governor. That's only the middle class way. But don't tell Eliza, she don't know. I always had a sort of delicacy about telling her.
No, quite right.
And you come to the church and you see me through straight.
With pleasure, as far as a bachelor can.
May I come too, Mr. Doolittle? I'd be very sorry to miss your wedding.
We should indeed be honored by your condescension, ma'am. My poor old woman, she'd look upon it as a tremendous compliment. She's been very low lately, thinking of the happy days that are no more.
Mrs. Higgins takes Doolittle's arm. Eliza is about to leave.
Eliza? Your stepmother's going to marry me. Will you come to the church and see me turned off?
She's taken aback.
I've ordered the car, dear. Wait for me. Colonel Pickering can go with the bridegroom.
Bridegroom. What a word. Makes men realize his position somehow.
Doolittle puts on his top hat.
So long. See you at the church. Middle-class morality claims its victim.
He leaves. Eliza is standing at the window.
Eliza!
Higgins throws down his hat and goes to her.
Well, Eliza, you've had a bit of your own back now, as you call it. You had enough, and you're going to be reasonable, or do you want some more?
You want me back only to put up with your tempers and pick up your slippers and fetch and carry for you.
I haven't said I wanted you back at all.
Oh, indeed. Then what are we talking about?
About you, not about me. If you come back to me, I shall treat you just the same as I've always treated you. I can't change my nature, and I don't intend to change my manners. My manners are exactly the same as Colonel Pickering's.
That's not true. He treats a flower girl as if she were a duchess.
I treat a duchess as if she were a flower girl.
I see. The same to everyone. Oh, I don't care how you treat me. I don't mind your swearing at me. I don't mind the black eye. I've had one before this, but I won't be passed over.
Then get out of my way, for I won't stop for you. You talk to me as if I were a bus.
So you are a bus, all bounce and go, and no consideration for anyone.
Once for all, understand that I go my way and do my work without caring tuppence what happens to either of us. So you can come back or go to the devil, whichever you please.
He looks at her, then looks away quickly.
And what am I to come back for?
For the fun of it. That's what I took you on for.
And you can throw me out tomorrow if I don't do everything you want me to.
And you can walk out tomorrow if I don't do everything you want me to.
And live with my stepmother.
Yes, or sell flowers. Or would you rather marry Pickering?
I wouldn't marry you if you asked me. And you're nearer my age than what he is.
Than he is.
He frowns at her.
I'll speak as I like. You're not my teacher now.
She walks away from him. Smiling, he follows.
I don't know the Pickering would, though. He's as confirmed an old bachelor as I am.
That's not what I want, and don't you think it. I've always had chaps enough wanting me that way. Freddie Hill writes to me twice and three times a day. Sheets and sheets.
Blast his impudence.
He has a right to if he likes the poor lad. And he does love me.
You have no right to encourage him.
Every girl has a right to be loved.
What, by fools like that?
Freddie's not a fool.
Oh.
If he's weak and poor and wants me, maybe he'd make me happier than my betters who bully me and don't want me. I can do without you. Don't think I can't.
He starts to jump up, but stops himself.
You've never asked, I suppose, whether I could do without you.
She is encouraged. Then resigned.
You will have to do without me.
I can do without anybody. I have my own soul, my own spark of divine fire. But I shall miss you, Eliza. I confess that humbly and gratefully. I've become accustomed to your voice and appearance. I even like them, rather.
Well, you have them both on your gramophone and in your book of photographs. When you feel lonely, you can turn the machine on. It's got no feeling as to hurt.
I can't turn your soul on.
She looks at him in surprise, and then anger.
Oh, you're a devil. You can twist the heart in a girl as easily as some can twist her arms to hurt her. I want a little kindness. I know I'm only a common, ignorant girl, but I'm not dirt under your feet. What I did, it wasn't for the dresses and for the taxis. It was because we were pleasant together and because I'd came to care for you, not forgetting the difference between us and not wanting you to make love to me, but, well,
more friendly like.
Of course, Eliza. That's exactly how I feel. And how Pickering feels. Eliza, you're a fool.
That's not a proper answer to give me.
If you can't stand the coldness of my sort of life and the strain of it, go back to the gutter. Oh, it's a fine life, the life of the gutter. It's real, it's warm, it's violent. Not like science, literature, and classical music, and philosophy, and art. You find me cold, unfeeling, selfish, don't you? Very well, then marry some sentimental hog or other, with a thick pair of lips to kiss you with, and a thick pair of boots to kick you with. If you can't appreciate what you've got, you better get what you can appreciate.
I won't care for anyone who doesn't care for me.
Oh, Eliza, you're an idiot. I waste the treasures of my Miltonic mind by spreading them before you.
Oh, I can't talk to you. You turn everything against me. You know very well that I can't go back to the gutter, as you call it, and that I've no real friends in the world but you and the Colonel. You think I must go back to Wimpole Street because I've nowhere to go but father's. But don't you be too sure that you have me under your feet to be bullied and talked down. I'll marry Freddy, I will, as soon as I'm able to support him.
What, that young fool? You shall marry an ambassador. You shall marry the Viceroy of India. I won't have my masterpiece thrown away on Freddy.
You think I'd like you to say that? But I haven't forgotten what you said a minute ago. If I can't have kindness, I'll have independence.
Independence? That's middle-class blasphemy. We're all of us dependent one on another, every soul on earth.
I'll let you see whether I'm dependent on you. If you can preach, I can teach. I'll go and be a teacher.
What do you teach in heaven's name?
What you taught me. I'll teach phonetics. I'll offer myself as an assistant to Professor Carpati.
What, that humbug? That imposter? That toadying ignoramus? You take one step in his direction, I'll wring your neck, you hear?
Wring away! What do I care? I knew you'd strike me one day.
Oh.
Now I know how to deal with you. Oh, what a fool I was not to think of it before. That's done you, Henry Higgins, it has, and I don't give that for your bullying and your fine talk. When I think of myself crawling under your feet and being trampled on and talked down, when all the time I'd only to lift my finger to be as good as you are, oh, I could just kick myself.
By George, Eliza, I said I'd make a woman of you, and I have. I like you like this.
Yes, you make up to me now that I'm not afraid of you and I can do without you.
Of course I do, you little fool. 5 minutes ago, you were a millstone round my neck. Now you're a tower of strength, a consort battleship.
Eliza is touched by this, but maintains her poise.
Goodbye, Professor Higgins.
He frowns in disbelief. As she turns to leave, he stares at her. He goes to the window and sees Freddy waiting in a car. Eliza runs out of the house, and Higgins darts after her. As Eliza and Freddy drive off, Higgins hurries out the front door. He goes to the corner and watches them drive down the road. He glares in a jealous rage. With his hands in his pockets, he crosses the street and walks in the same direction. He marches along the embankment. Over a steel bridge. And then onto a residential street where he is oblivious to passers-by. He stomps up to his house on Wimpole Street and bursts into the living room. With his hands on his hips, he looks around the room and then heads over to the sound equipment and smashes a stack of recordings. Reaching for his chocolates, he accidentally hits a switch that turns on the record player. He sits.
Oh, I ain't dirty. You wash my face and hands before I come out it.
I shall make a duchess of this draggle-tailed gutter snout.
Oh!
In 6 months, in 3 years.
He turns it off and puts his hand over his eyes in despair.
I washed my face and hands before I came.
He looks up and then turns around.
I did.
Eliza is leaning against the door. She smiles. Higgins looks down and then turns his back to her.
Where the devil are my slippers, Eliza?
The end. This described version of Pygmalion was created by Audio Vision Canada. The narrative description was written by Jane Butler and Catherine Mockler. Narrated by Arabi Lockhart. Woven into the soundtrack by Randy Giroux and Valerie Hochschild. And produced by Marco Sorin. For other described movies and audio cinema presentations available from Audio Vision Canada, call toll-free 1-800-567-6755. Cast: Higgins, Leslie Howard. Eliza, Wendy Hiller. Doolittle, Wilfred Lawson. Mrs. Higgins, Marie Laure. Colonel Pickering, Scott Sunderland. Mrs. Pierce, Jean Cadell. Freddie, David Tree. Mrs. Eynsford Hill, Everly Gregg. Clara, Louine McGrath. Count Aristide Carpate, Esme Percy. Ambassadress, Violet Vanbrugh. Duchess, Irene Brown. Grand Old Lady, Kate Cutler. A Vicar, Obi Clarence. Sarcastic Bystander, Ivor Bernard. First Policeman, Cecil Trouncer.